For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, a happy Thursday to you. Welcome to the one and only podcast hosted by two people that Alex Anthopoulos could plausibly call information security threats. My name is Paul Boyer, joined by The Athletic's Matt Gelb. For different reasons,
of course. What an intro.
Yeah, how about that, huh? You got to have a tagline. You got to have a way to draw people in. And that's what's unique. That's what sets us apart.
He runs a tight ship.
Yes, he does.
Anthopoulos.
Yeah. I would know. And we're back after about a week and a half away. I'm back after a dalliance, a trip, a jaunt down to Clearwater for my first spring training, which was fantastic.
What was your favorite thing?
What was my favorite?
Did you go to the backfields at all or no?
So I didn't actually end up getting to go to the backfields, but my favorite thing was, and this will give me an opportunity to shout out some really cool folks. The best thing was actually not anything that happened during gameplay itself or even after. It was a really nice gesture on behalf of Chris Ware and the Phillies comms group, who were able to get my dad and I onto the field for a couple of minutes during batting practice. And that was before Saturday's game. And that was really, it was just really cool. We didn't ask for it. We weren't like looking for handouts or anything. It was just a nice little bit of outreach. So thank you, Chris. Thank you, Kevin Gregg. I got a chance to shake hands with your beat partner, Todd Zalecki, who reinforced my second favorite thing about the trip, which was that Hawaiian restaurant, Hanu.
Yeah,
that's
our spot.
Man, I'll tell you what, you guys can pick them. That place was really cool. But long story short, I'm not going to get into a whole big trip recap here. It was a lot of really neat stuff. If you've never been, even if you have been, and you have the opportunity to go down, we stayed in Dunedin, the northern part of Dunedin. So a little farther away from the Philly Stadium itself, but pretty close to a nice little hub of activity, at least. There's more stuff than you think down there to do. There really is. I don't know what your preconceptions are of Florida. I thought it was going to be a little more snoozy than it ended up being. So we were pleasantly surprised.
Clearwater is like the spring break capital of the world now, apparently. But yes, Dunedin is cool. And usually with Todd, we spend a lot of our time in Dunedin, whatever free time we have. And
So that was fantastic. And I got a nice little souvenir sunburn to take home with me that is only just now starting to fade away. But back to the things that actually matter. Things have been pretty quiet for the last week and a half in a good way. You know, spring is that kind of gauntlet where you just hope nobody gets hurt. And we are squarely in that part of the spring schedule. You look at what's happening around the league lately, you know, news coming out last night that Devin Williams is going to miss a huge chunk of time. Gerrit Cole is going to miss a good amount of time. Aaron Judge had a scare. He might, you know, miss a little bit of time, maybe not. I'm not really sure. But
Yuri Perez keeps getting hurt for the Marlins, mm-hmm. who apparently Sixto Sanchez,
big Sixto.
Husky Sixto is going to make the Marlins. I can't wait for that. But yeah, there's a lot of injuries. You're right.
It's not
that's
great.
The biggest fear. This is the dog days of spring.
And the thing that my mind was drifting to as I saw, you know, the Devin Williams news come out late last night is, oh man, I'm just waiting for the Philly shoe to drop. So I started looking back through some game logs. I'm trying to see, all right, who hasn't appeared for a while. One guy who stood out to me, and I think we just need to clear a little bit of air here, both for him and in general, is we haven't seen Ryan Kirkring in official spring action in almost 2 weeks, but it's not injury related in his particular case, right? This is a case of there's an illness going around the team, the clubhouse.
Yeah, and I wish I was a little more informed on this because I haven't been down there for 2 weeks now. I'm going back next time we tape. I will be back in Florida for the last stretch of spring.
Awesome.
I can just go on like what I've heard from somebody and then also what I've read. And I know Todd Zalecki from LV.com wrote, you know, that both Kirkering and Chris Sanchez are scheduled to pitch this weekend. The Phillies are taking a long trip across the state. They're going to the Space Coast because they're going to play two games on the other side of the state. And it sounds like both Kirkering and Sanchez are going to pitch in one of those games. And yeah, it's been hard this spring, especially with me not being down there for a large chunk of it here to like sort of follow what's going on, like in terms of injury stuff, because you'll track, you know, I always keep track of like who's pitched, who hasn't pitched, who hasn't played. Mm-hmm. And that's usually a sign of, oh, hey, something might be going on because, you know, the Phillies aren't always the most transparent with injuries, even if they're minor ones. And it's been hard this spring because really a lot of guys have just been sidelined by this illness that has actually affected a lot of camps. If you'll notice, like it's just been going around in Florida. It seems like it's hit just about every team. Phillies got hit pretty hard, it sounds like, and it sounds like that both Kirkering and Sanchez were two guys who I think were maybe the most sick. But okay. I do think that both of them have pitched on the backfields in the last few days. I think they got into minor league game scrimmages on the backfields. They just haven't gotten into a big league game.
Okay. All right. So that's good. That's good to hear. So we've avoided some of the worst of the injury stuff lately. I know Dylan Covey, it just came out that he'll start the year on the IL.
Covey, Rucker's probably on the IL, some depth pitchers. You know, Brandon Marsh is back on the field. He played in his first game yesterday and, you know, it clearly has enough time to, you know, be ready for opening day. Everything has kind of gone according to plan as they laid out. So no real reason to have any conspiracy theories about him. And Schwarber's banged up. Sounds like he might play today. I haven't seen a lineup yet. We're taping this at 9:30 a.m. They're probably waiting on him. That's why there's not a lineup yet.
And in parallel, I guess, we'll call it that, to the last of the spring training schedule as we ramp up here. I mean, we're a week away from actual games, not actual
Phillies
games.
We're 2 weeks from opening day.
2 weeks from opening day. The Padres and Dodgers are going to play a couple games out in Korea next week.
Right, yes.
Those games will count. So we're almost here. We're almost to the prime time, baby. But in parallel to the spring schedule, there is something new happening in Arizona and Florida this year, and the league is calling it the spring breakout. Get it? Spring break out.
I get it.
Breakout. Anyway,
it's basically just another spring training game in which prospects are playing, although that's like most spring training games. Although the Phillies are using it as a chance to get like some of their youngest players in it, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's nice. The Phillies will play the Tigers squad this Saturday, so that's March 16th. That's at 1 o'clock. I'm looking at the What You Need to Know article here, and it's not totally clear the best way to watch this. It mentions ESPN Plus. It mentions something, Tigers.tv, which I've never gone to before. And the Phillies will have a radio broadcast. If that'll
get you
through.
The Phillies are broadcasting it on radio, and you can listen to it online. But yeah, I don't know if you're going to be able to see it.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, it would be nice to check out something like that. I like the idea. I like the idea of an all-prospect spring training game against another team's all prospect. It's cool. It's whatever. It's not as good as the, I can't remember the exact name they gave it, but you remember a few years ago, just before the start of the regular season,
Phillies
for a couple of years. Yeah. They had two teams of prospects play one another in Citizens Bank Park, a couple of exhibitions.
No, the cooler one was when the Phillies, there were, I don't know. This was probably like, I don't know what year it was, but the Phillies went to Reading to play an exhibition game in Reading before the season started. And it was like the Phillies versus their prospects. And I thought that was awesome.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I'd have to remember what year that was. That was in, I don't know.
Yeah, that was
but yes, they had. But yes, they had prospect teams play each other, yes, at the ballpark too.
Yeah, and that was cool. And they've since not done that. Hopefully that comes. Well, I think that was a draw back when the team was not as good and they were trying to focus on the future, but hey, you know, bring it back anyway. It's fun. So that's what's been happening. Apart from that, I think the only roster move so far, officially, at least on the books, is that Michael Mercado, the interesting relief arm of note, was officially optioned. So he will not make the team out of spring training. I don't know if anybody was really expecting that, but he is something to keep an eye on.
Yeah,
and that's been it, right? Everything else is still pretty much the way it was a week ago, except I think there's been a bit of a perspective shift on the way the outfield battle is shaking up, right? All along, our focus has been on, is center field going to be Johan Rojas? Or, well, I guess I shouldn't really even call it center field. Is the last outfield spot, there we go, going to go to Johan Rojas or Christian Pache? And Matt, you and I were talking just before we fired up the recording here. Maybe that's not exactly the way to think about it, maybe there's a different angle we should be taking on what this positional battle actually could mean and what the ramifications, I guess, would be depending on which of those two guys wins that spot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm reading an old story from 2016 where they did play a game in Reading, and it's very funny. The names who are on, it was the Phillies against their Futures team. Sorry, it's very 2016. Mitch Walding was on the team.
Mitch Walding.
Yes. So a lot to think about here at the outfield, and I have a lot of thoughts. And my biggest thought is I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do because I don't think they know what they're going to do. I know what they want to do. Like, they want Johan Rojas to be the center fielder.
Uh-huh.
And I still think that if you were betting on this, which I don't think you can, I still think that's what's going to happen.
Don't underestimate the books.
I think that Rojas will be the starting center fielder and that Brandon Marsh will be the starting left fielder. I think that's what they want to happen. But this isn't a Pache or Rojas thing.
Okay.
Like, if Johan Rojas goes to AAA and they keep Christian Pache on the roster, Pache is not the center fielder. In fact, I don't think he'd be playing very much. Like, I think if Rojas goes to AAA, you would be looking now at a everyday player in Whit Merrifield and left field and some sort of platoon slash mostly Marsh in center field. You'd have Pache as sort of the weak side tandem to that platoon. He'd play against lefties. That is his, you know, his strongest suit. You know, I can know he's had a couple good at-bats here. Just for comparison's sake, I mean, he has only had, and we're taping this Thursday morning, he's only had 17 at-bats this spring, as opposed to Rojas, who's had 33 at-bats. Like, Rojas is the leads most at-bats on the team. Yeah. I mean, and clearly, you know, for good reason. Like, he's making some changes, and they want him to swing his way through this. Like, I think that's why they're not as focused on some of the results. I do know that he has chased less. I know the numbers haven't necessarily borne that out yet. But this isn't like a, this isn't a Pache or Rojas for starting center field thing. This is a Pache or Whit Merrifield everyday thing. And that is why I think still the spring numbers notwithstanding, and I don't put a lot into the spring numbers. Like, I'm think they don't either. I think they're more looking at how, you know, the quality of at bat. And I know the quality of bat hasn't always been there for Rojas, but they're looking at sort of the process and the thinking behind it. Like, you know, is he sticking with the changes? Is he making good swing decisions? You know, where can he keep improving? Mm-hmm. You know, how long will it take him to swing through these? And you'd rather have him swing through it in the spring than in April. So I think that's smart the way they're handling this. I just don't think that Whit Merrifield, you want him playing every day. I also just don't love Brandon Marsh in center field. Like, I think he's okay out there, but he's clearly not Rojas. And I'm just not convinced that Christian Pache is a viable major league hitter. And I know that's going to meet some eye rolls because there are people who are very passionate about this. I have found this out because I had a roster production that I published on The Athletic earlier this week. And, you know, people are mad and I'm sorry, but like, I don't know. I mean, I just don't, we have a really large sample size of Christian Pache in the majors, and he's one of the worst non-pitcher hitters in the last 4 years in the sport. And I do think that matters. Will there be possible interest in him if he doesn't make the club? I think so. Like, is it possible to get him through waivers? Maybe, like, they might. I mean, I don't think that's like a, that's, I don't think it's like a slam dunk that like somebody is definitely picking him up. I think somebody probably, you know, I think there's worse flyers you can take, you know, 50 grand for a waiver claim, give him a shot if you're a rebuilding team. But I just think that Rojas trying to figure it out with Marsh and left is a better situation, period, than Marsh slash Pache a little bit in center and Merrifield every day in left. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I see three players in looking at Rojas and Pache and Whit Merrifield as all having something of a similar arc last year. Not exactly, but there's some similarity here. All three of them had nice starts to their seasons, right? In some cases, they come out stronger than others. Merrifield through the first 4 months of the year was hitting great. And then the last 2 months, not so great. Pache hitting great through July, got hurt, comes back eventually, and his September is terrible. You know, you can blame some of that on being cold, and I get that. Rojas, we saw what happened in the playoffs at the plate. He had a nice regular season line, and then the playoffs did not go well. So it's really a matter for me of how to guard against that happening, while also understanding that Rojas, of those three guys, is your best upside play. He has the most room left to grow something, right? Yes. That's just true. Pache is not old, but we have seen now at the major league level that there is probably there's a lower ceiling for him now, I think, and it's being understood and it's coming into clearer focus that there is less of a chance that he reaches the potential he had when he was on the cusp of his debut with Atlanta a couple years ago, when people were looking at his play in the outfield, which is still very good. He is still a very good defender.
He's a tremendous outfielder. Yes.
Cannot take that away from him. If he's on the team, he is an asset with his glove, but he is not looking like he's going to fulfill a lot of the offensive promise that was hoped for him. Merrifield, he's coming up toward the end of his career. And I think his trailing off at the end of his year was for different reasons than for Pache and Rojas. It wasn't a matter of the league adjusting back to him. It seemed more like time catching up to him, that maybe he had played a little bit too much. I say this as much as I can, that every ball player is different. And every body is different. People will age differently and go through seasons differently. You know, look at JT and how much he catches and how he seems to perform better as the year goes on and he catches more, which seems to go against total conventional wisdom, but that's the way it goes. But it seemed like Merrifield just sort of hit a wall with about a month and a half to go, and then it couldn't really recover. So you have three guys you cannot trust as full-time players right now. Whoever makes it and whatever role it's going to be, there's going to be a balancing act. And I think that looking at all three of those situations, it is probably best for this team, both taking into consideration the now and the later, to have Rojas win this job and to stick with it. This is not to say that Rojas makes the team and then, you know, they're just going to come with him hell or high water. I'm sure he's going to have a long leash. But if he can't hack it, literally, he'll get optioned. The problem then, of course, is you've already lost Pache. Presumably, he's gone to some team on a waiver claim or a catch trade or something, and then you have to figure it out from there.
Sure. But again, he's not I'm saying this very clearly. They do not view him as an everyday player in any scenario, basically, right. Unless there's injuries.
Right. So he's a platoon guy, you know. You think of Marsh as a semi-platoon guy. I'm sure he'll still get some rest against lefties. You don't really think they're going to run Merrifield out there all the time. Although I do like his comment about, you know, I want to play my way into more playing time.
But you are laying out the perfect reason here is that because you have guys, you're not sure if you're trusting them as everyday guys, the perfect solution for me, and again, I think you try to do this for the first few months, is you have Rojas in center, you have Marsh in left, and you have Merrifield making one or two starts, you know, two starts a week, maybe three starts a week, you know, one in left field, or, you know, all in left field, right? Two in left field, you know, maybe one of those days Marsh slides over to center, et cetera. You're just hedging yourself a little bit. Like Marsh and Rojas, there's a way with Merrifield that Marsh and Rojas can only have to play 5 or 6 times a week, right? Not seven times if they're playing 7 games, or 5 times if they're playing 6 games in a week. So that's your way of hedging. Merrifield is your hedge. And that protects you. Now, yes, you're right. I mean, if you let this play out for the first 3 months, let's say, and you find that Rojas just isn't doing enough offensively. And again, I struggle to believe that. Look, he can't be a total zero out there, but again, because of what he brings, because of the rest of the lineup, which you're expecting, and you're not expecting every guy to hit. I get that. But like, This is a team that should hit and should score and can get offense from 8 spots in the lineup. And if there's one spot in the lineup where you're not getting offense, but you're getting elite defense, you should be able to deal with that.
You'd think.
Right? And I know the playoffs stick in everyone's mind. Fully understand. I just think, like, I don't think you can use that to color your, how you're evaluating right now. And, you know, the spring has not been good for Rojas. I don't think there's any question about that. I just don't think that they're using the spring numbers to evaluate. I think, again, because it's not a Pache or Rojas thing, it's more about Rojas or Merrifield, basically. I just don't know if you want to pull that lever yet. Now, like, the most conservative decision here would be to send Rojas to AAA, because that allows you to keep all four guys.
Right. Right.
And that just is going to be dependent on how you feel about Pache, who, again, I'm not sold. I mean, like, we're talking about last year, like, he had, you know, I'm looking at it now. I mean, he had 95 total plate appearances. About 60 of them were, you know, the first 60 were really, really good. That's like a good month. It was spread over a few months because of injury. I just think the larger track record of this guy tells us that he is not viable enough at the plate, and that Rojas could possibly grow into that. And is also probably better in center than Pache, who's very good.
Right, right. And then you turn your eyes to, okay, say they move ahead with Rojas making the team and Pache is the guy squeezed out. Say there's no, you know, injury between now and then that will preserve Pache's spot on the roster while somebody else gets healthy. Then you think about, okay, what is the backup plan if Rojas, you know, gets a couple months in and is hitting in the low ones with a 400 OPS? You know, you don't want that, but hey, it could happen. You know, you start.
I mean, you have your backup plan. I mean, you have it, Marsh. I mean, you at least know that Marsh can play center field.
You have your immediate backup, and then if you think about, you know, the bench bat at bats that would be taken up by that, how much would you lose offensively if, you know, Weston Wilson is the guy who gets up as a reinforcement, or maybe Matt Kroon makes his debut,
or Cody Clemens.
You lose defense. Okay. I get that. There are not a whole lot of outfielders who are better defenders than Christian Pache. I'll grant you that. I'll stipulate that. But the fact is, you would not be dropping off so tremendously with your immediate replacement in Brandon Marsh as to not feel like you're getting a bit compensated by the likely offensive uptick. Again, these are bench at bats we're talking about. The offensive uptick you could get from somebody like Weston Wilson, who, for my eyes, has really looked good. I kind of get why they're so intrigued by him. You know, he's not going to make the team out of the spring.
He's really good depth. But he's really good depth. Because he can play all over. Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about when we get to this point, is who is the next man up from a depth perspective.
Yeah. Right? And he's that guy at a lot of different spots on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, so I know one last thing about this, and that's, you know, some people look at it as Pache versus Cave, which I don't think it is, because of the handedness. I also think that, and I wrote this in my roster projection, like, I think it's very, very possible the last man on the bench is not currently in camp with them. Like, I think that they are going to look again. And let's not forget, Dalton Guthrie won the 26th man job last year.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, a day before opening day, they traded for Pache, and Guthrie got an option. I know that they're just looking to see, like, who might be cut. Who might not make someone's roster from another camp, a left-handed hitting outfielder. I think they can upgrade on Jake Cave, no doubt. I think Jake Cave's actually had, like, an okay spring. Like, he's been fine. It's not great. But, like, the spring, I don't know. The spring just doesn't matter. Like, I'm sorry. I keep coming back to this. Like, you're looking at guys to see if they made, you know, if they're making good adjustments, you know. But, like, you know, new pitches, etc. I just, like, man, like, teams, like, they just don't put a lot into these spring games. They really don't. It's so freaking long. I mean, it is spring training is to build up the starting pitchers, and it's somewhat antiquated because these guys come into camp now, you know, pretty built up.
Yeah.
But, beyond that, I don't know. I mean, every team is just living in fear of every day that somebody gets hurt.
Right. That's the thing. You just want guys to get healthy, and you take everything with multiple grains of salt, right? I'm looking at some of these spring lines right now. You know, we're talking about Rojas, and I see he's got these 33 at bats. And my takeaway, this is not the way I would look at it in the regular season, but my takeaway right now is, oh, he's only struck out 7 times. You know, it's over 20%.
Yeah, not every at-bat is tracked, right, because there's not Statcast in every ballpark.
Right.
But if you don't go do a search on his tracked at-bats this spring, and I don't know what percentage is, it's a pretty high percentage. He's chasing less, like, than he did last year. Now, like, is that something to hang your hat on? I don't know. But like, it's at least like, if they're looking for, again, if they told him, hey, this is, these are things we want you to improve on, and that was one of them, he has made some improvement there this spring.
Yeah. And then with the rest of them, you know, you talk about your regulars, who cares? Because the ones with track
right.
records,
that's the
what
thing
you
is
expect.
Like, we're talking about, yeah, we're like, it's such a double standard, right? Because these guys literally, I don't want to say they're not taking it seriously, because I think some guys do, but really they don't take them seriously until like the last week, the ABs. Mm. Most of these guys aren't taking this very seriously.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but that's...
Well, you know, you kind of have to measure yourself with how long this is. But I remember one of the last times I really bought into spring numbers as having any sort of like predictive effect on what we were about to see or the start guys might get off to, I should say. And it was Jimmy Rollins around the time he was playing in the World Baseball Classic. And he was having a great spring all around, and he was hitting the crap out of the ball. And then it might have been 2013, I'm guessing, by that point then. But he ended up just not having the best year offensively. You know, you can look more recently to the likes of Michael Franco and Scott Kingery and the usual stars of spring who look great in spring, usually against talent that is not consistently at the level of the major leagues, which we've talked about before. And then they get off to slow starts when all they have to do is face major league caliber pitching, at least, you know, 9 times out of 10 plate appearances. It's just one of those things where everything's discounted. If they look bad, if it's a regular who looks bad, you really don't need to care, because the major league track record is all that matters there. If it's a prospect that looks bad, okay, well, then they need to go to the minors to work on some stuff. If they look good, then you can just say, oh, that's nice. That's good.
I mean, you're looking for extremes, right? You're looking for outliers. Like, there's some guys, and there's been studies on this, right? Where it's like an extreme outlier spring in a good way can be somewhat predictive. And so, you know, we always have those moments that we think about. Like, I remember, like, everyone thinks about, like, that Cole Hamels, you know, when he was young, he comes up and he faces the Yankees and he strikes up the side or whatever. And it was Don Brown hit 2 homers in a spring game once when he's wearing number Verlander. 78 at Verlander. And I was like, oh, wow, like, holy crap. I remember, like, a Tommy Joseph game when he was still catching. He caught Roy one day and he had a, you know, double off Steve Strasburg. And I was like, whoa, like, that's, you know, like, so you're looking for that. And that's fun. Like, yes. That's fun. But, like, I don't know. And I'm not trying to minimize this. Like, Rojas Rojas has not been good. I just don't know if that's the basis. If 33 spring at bats are the basis, and then, you know, what, 17 spring at bats for Pache are the basis to make a rather important decision here. And I know that there's a way for them to kick the can down the curb, down the road. That's the wrong expression.
Kind of like yours, though. That was good. Anyway, continue.
I think, because it's not, I keep coming back to this, it's not Rojas or Pache. It's Rojas or Whit Merrifield every day.
Bing, bang, boom.
You know, I don't know. They didn't sign him to be an everyday guy. And I think he would be exposed if he's an everyday guy. If they need him to be an everyday guy for 2 weeks because of an injury, sure. Totally fine. They could do a lot worse. Everyday guy for 3 months to start? Oof.
Right. And that's why it comes back to the upside play, right? Like, we are talking about guys who could potentially be exposed as everyday players, but for different reasons and with different outlooks. You know, one of these guys is 22, about to, you know, embark on his first full major league season. And the other guy is coming up toward the end of his career, signed on to be, you know, a role player, essentially. I hope he's good. I'm rooting for him, and I like what I see out of him so far. But it's different situations, different outlooks, different ways you need to treat what you're seeing from these players. And I think last year serves as, you know, an educational benchmark for both those guys, again, for different reasons. But you don't want Merrifield to get exposed too quickly. We saw that happen with Ed Sosa. You know, Edmundo Sosa got thrust into a starting role, and, you know, what had looked great in the previous year in limited capacity all of a sudden got turned against him because he's hyper aggressive, and teams began exploiting that in a more effective way because they got additional looks at him. You could find, I'm sure, some holes to exploit with both these guys. They're not perfect players, either one of them. But with how young Rojas is, with how much it appears we have left in room to grow, offensively especially, you can live with it to get the defense while he works on figuring that out. And if it doesn't look like he makes progress at the major league level, which is where the real importance starts. So I'm with you. I think he makes it, you know, hell or high water, well, barring injury. Then that's where you make your judgment after that.
So one last scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, what if they just don't have a lefty bat other than Garrett Stubbs on the bench? You know, what if they say, Jake Cave, and I'm just looking at the contract. I have the contract here in my email. I'm pulling it up right now. It was a little bit of an unusual deal. It's $1 million, but $500,000 is guaranteed. You know, let's say
the poison pill. Like,
yeah, let's try to get him through waivers, and maybe we can get him through waivers. And then also maybe he accepts assignment if he gets through waivers because he wants his money. And we get him through waivers, we keep everybody, and we have Pache in the majors, and we don't have a lefty bat on the bench. What do you think about that?
I mean, I look at the way the team performed with the right-handed batters they had against right-handed pitching, and they did okay. They did fine. You know, relative to the league, they were just like slightly above average with, you know, the pitcher having the platoon advantage. That, of course, includes starters. I am okay with it because I am less somebody who believes in the absolute of having the batter advantage over the handedness of the pitcher automatically means you're coming out ahead. I just don't think that is absolutely true. A lot of it comes down to the quality of hitter and how they face the same handedness, right? It's a discussion you'd have to go in deep for every player in every mm-hmm. situation, you know, without, you know, wasting too much time
here. And also, let's be like, what is the only occasion in which they would need a left-handed pinch hitter?
If they're facing just right-handed closer and it's late in the game.
Yeah, and the only guy you're pinch hitting for is Rojas.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not traditional, and it's like also subject to change. You can decide, you know, a couple months in or a couple weeks in, you need a lefty bat off the bench, but maybe that's the path. Maybe that's how they keep everybody.
Yeah. Well, I do think it's important. It's
having Rojas and Pache both on the roster seems a little...
It's a little redundant. Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Redundant is the word. I don't think you need two guys taking up two roster spots for those skill sets. I don't. It's unfortunate.
Would everybody be happy if they upgraded the Cave spot with a lefty hitter from another camp? And that's that.
Maybe. I feel like there are some who are getting itchy for a move of some kind just to make it look like they're actively addressing this. But I don't know if you need to right now. I don't know if you do. If they don't find that player you were talking about a few minutes ago to upgrade around the fringes of the bench, I don't know if I'd be so mad at that. I'm okay to let it play out for a little bit and see how things go, and then, you know, when May rolls around, then you start thinking about it. Yeah, but that's just me.
I agree.
That's just me.
All
right. Well, all right. So that's basically it. That's basically it from the last week and a half. You know, there's still time for things to shake out in either direction. You want to hope. I hope, of course, that everything sort of stays basically where it's been. Everybody, offensively and pitching, just stay healthy.
Yeah,
I don't care if you give up three home runs. Just hang in there. Like, it's fine. Get your work in. Get stretched out. You know, tell the training staff if you feel an ache or a twinge. Don't try and play through it.
If your groin hurts, tell them your groin
hurts. Yes, exactly. Thank you, Kyle. But that's basically that. We have a little more time to go. Matt, good to hear you'll be back down there with the team. Spring breakout, again, coming up this Saturday in the afternoon. I guess one more thing before we go. Matt, you got anything coming up on the pages of The Athletic that you'd like to plug?
I had a Nick Castellanos, download that I had a lot of fun talking to Nick. Yeah, I don't really like how the story turned out because I don't like anything that I write, but I did enjoy the conversation with Nick, and I hope people did too. You know, who knows? There's no predicting Nick Castellanos, but he is definitely interesting to talk to and hear from. And one I have coming up, it'll be on the website Friday morning, is a fun one, I think, on one of the pitchers who's going to be in that spring breakout game. And he's of Italian descent, Sam Aldegheri. He's got a really interesting story.
Yes, he does. No, I'm very interested in reading that story, so I'll be on the lookout for that. And I badly want to waste some of Castellanos' time and get him on here. But I think that's a discussion for later.
That would be something.
Oh, boy. Anyway, that's it for this update, this episode, this partition of the saga that is Phillies Therapy. Thank you all so much for joining, listening in. Go check out Matt's stuff on The Athletic. A belated shout out once more to our friends at Phillies Nation for continuing to help get the word out here and syndicate some of our stuff on their posts. Maybe that's where you're coming from. Thank you very much if you are. Enjoy the rest of these games. We'll be back with you at some point again next week. Maybe there'll be a little more to talk about. Maybe we'll check out the spring breakout and see if there's somebody else to get excited about. But in the meantime, enjoy these games. Phillies play the Red Sox a little later today here on Thursday. And then it'll be the weekend before you know it. So thanks once again for Matt. I am Paul. We'll catch you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.